The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from primarily the Washington Post today, several articles. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we will be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. You may recall that we recently featured on Armchair Traveler an article explaining the concept of sustainable travel. Well, in essence, it's a movement whereby communities strive to maintain the character and charm that draws visitors. At the same time, it demands creative and innovative ways to overcome the impact of more visitors than you may want or need. Well, too much of a good thing can bring unwanted change, even taking away that which made a community a popular travel destination in the first place. There are endangered destinations, as writer John Briley is going to explain in his article, Five Forces That Are Changing the Travel Landscape, this article from the July 18, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. So let us begin. Travelers with bucket lists tend to see the challenge as limited by their schedule, budget, and lifespan. Increasingly, though, there's a fourth dimension. How much longer a destination or experience, as advertised, will be around for a tourist to enjoy. Many places are disappearing or transforming before our eyes. Pacific Islands are coming to sea level rise. The Amazon rainforest withering because of unchecked development. The Gulf of California losing the vaquita porpoise to extinction by poaching. Well, to be fair, not all factors altering the travel landscape are bad. The modernity that nostalgic backpackers have decried for in the Himalaya, for example, also brought first-world medical care to isolated communities. But right now, the tourism world is facing a suite of mostly negative transformative influences. Here we highlight five: climate change, deforestation, erosion, wildlife poaching, and gentrification, and offer examples of places and experiences that may soon go the way of the traveler's check. As a tourist, you can help by choosing hotels, tour operators, and guides that work to solve some of these problems, not contribute to them, and by interacting with locals to appreciate the challenges they face. The last thing any of us wants is to check off a bucket list destination, only to realize that we're part of the reason it's disappearing. First topic is climate change. Rising seas and melting glaciers have obvious implications for residents and travelers, but so do some events less often tied to climate change, including drought, mudslides, wildfires, and shifts in species range that might, for example, bring mosquitoes and the diseases they carry to some regions for the first time in human history. Due in large part to major coral bleaching events in 2016 and 2017, average hard coral cover is down in all three regions of the 133,000-square-mile Great Barrier Reef for the first time since the Australian Institute of Marine Science began long-term monitoring. As of mid-2018, coral cover in the North region was half what it was in 2013, this according to the website Shutterstock. Another item, the number of glaciers in Montana's Glacier National Park declined from nearly 150 in 1910 when the park was established to 26 in 2015, this according to the U.S. Geological Survey. More glaciers are likely to disappear in the next few decades. This stunning park offers more than just ancient ice, but the loss has serious implications for the ecosystem and the species that depend on it, again according to the website Shutterstock. Now, while recent restoration efforts are helping reverse decades of poor water management decisions upstream, the Florida Everglades faces a multi-pronged threat of drought, excessive air temperatures, and elevated salinity from sea level rise, which not only kills the sawgrass prairie, but causes the underlying peat soil to collapse, foreshadowing a bleak future for the grasses, fish, and other species in the Everglades. And this is according to another website called iStock. Now on to the category of poaching. Poaching, which feeds a multi-billion-dollar illegal wildlife trade, also affects non-target species, says William Lawrence, a distinguished professor at James Cook University in Cairns, Australia. Arrival of the predatory humans in a formerly pristine area creates landscapes of fear among wildlife so that even species that aren't directly targeted bolt at the slightest indication that people are nearby. And although the mountain gorilla population in Central Africa has risen from an estimated 230 in the 1980s to 1,000 today, the species remains critically endangered, says Craig Sholley. He's Senior Vice President at the African Wildlife Foundation, and says the area has changed dramatically. You're now visiting an island forest surrounded by a sea of people. I'm optimistic about the gorilla's future, but 1,000 individuals is a small number, and climate change and disease could wipe them out. And this information made available through Bonnie Jo Mout of the Washington Post. Now, the number of Malayan tigers has dropped from an estimated 3,000 in the 1950s to fewer than 200 today, says Kay Kawanishi, head of conservation for the Malaysian Conservation Alliance for Tigers. Poachers use cable snares to target the critically endangered felines, which can reach 250 pounds. Globally, tigers have lost 93% of their habitat. All of this found in the iStock website. Now, the black rhino population has risen from a low of 2,300 in 1992 to about 5,500, but the status of the species remains precarious, says C.C. Seifert, deputy director of the International Rhino Foundation. Travelers have a good chance of seeing wild black rhinos in the Fenda Private Game Reserve in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, through the Malengwe Trust in Zimbabwe, or through Swaziland's big game parks, all of this found on iStock. Now, the next topic, deforestation. An estimated 18 million acres of forest, an area the size of Panama, is felled to make room for development every year, according to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. At that rate, the world's rainforest could be wiped out in 100 years. Across the Congo Basin in Africa, new roads are dicing up ecosystems and opening once pristine lands to slash and burn farmers and poachers. This is bad development, says Lawrence, in part because widespread corruption prevents any benefit from reaching the local people. The effects are most severe in Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, Cameroon, the Congo Republic, and Eastern Congo. A lot of sub-Saharan Africa is changing at an incredible pace. If you want to see natural Africa, you better go now, he says. And this is from Amari Hotchard. He is with the Agence French Presse and Getty Images. In Brazil's Pantanal, the world's largest wetland at 70,000 square miles, the conversion of forest to soy fields and other farms, coupled with other activity, such as diverting rivers and streams that feed the vast river basin, threatens an area with biodiversity that rivals the Amazon. This according to Eduardo Perez, an Associated Press writer. The forests of Borneo are being leveled for timber, palm oil, pulp, rubber, and minerals, says the Worldwide Fund for Nature. Within Indonesia, the amount of land used for palm oil production grew from 1.5 million acres in 1985 to nearly 30 million acres today, and this item found on Shutterstock. Now on to erosion. While change is one real constant, humankind, in our eternal quest for near-term gratification, has managed to accelerate the process, referring to erosion, in some places. Built in 1860, mud and brick Teyuat Kasba, housed in one of Morocco's richest men, that's Tommy El Glaoui, who, despite predating the clash, routinely rocked this Kasbah with wild parties. In part because he sided with the French in Morocco's independence fight, the state is not invested in restoring his fortress, and only one section run by Glaoui's descendants remains accessible to tourists. Wind, rain, and time have reduced the rest to nearly rubble. All of this courtesy of Peter Ingelick and Ulstein Bild of the Getty Images Corporation. The mother lode of silver inside the 15,800-foot Cerro Rico gave rise to the city of Potosi, Bolivia, which in the 1500s became the richest city in the world. With the crude tunnels dug to extract that wealth, apart from killing thousands of miners over the centuries, have left the mountain at risk of collapsing. a government stabilization project to save it might be too late, according to Izar Raldis, again with the agent's French press and Getty Images. Erosion of the soft chalk of the White Cliffs of Dover in England has increased from about an inch per year to about 10 times that over the past 150 years, according to a 2016 study published in the Journal of Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and the United States of America. That's enough to threaten some clifftop paths and infrastructures, said Robert Anderson, professor of geological sciences at the University of Colorado at Boulder and a study co-author. Further, he adds, cliffs do not walk back at a steady clip and may locally jump several meters at a time, which could elevate the risk unpredictably. All of this found on iStock. Then we have our final topic, and that's gentrification. The effects of gentrification on travelers may favor my favorite dim sum cart is gone, pale in comparison to the challenge faced by residents pushed out by unaffordable rents or, in extreme cases, bulldozers. In an increasingly populous and hyper-informed world, fewer and fewer pockets of desirable land will escape the notice of developers. In Kenya, Lamu earned renown as one of the most authentic Swahili settlements in East Africa, but because of its strategic location near Ethiopia and South Sudan, Lamu is now the site of a huge port project that will bring more ships, more roads, more pollution, and the idyllic paradise that is Lamu will disappear, says Harriet Constable, a journalist and expert on the area. This courtesy of Tony Karumba of Agents French Press and Getty Images. Now, the one-square-mile neighborhood of Oakwood established its identity in the 1930s and 40s as the only area of Venice, California, where African-Americans were allowed to buy property. Oakwood's community vibe began to dissolve around 2012 when developers and tech millionaires saw gold in the time-worn houses a few blocks from the Pacific Ocean. A dwindling core of old-timers is fighting to salvage the neighborhood's culture, according to writer Megan Hollander. Now, for decades, the vendors of Vietnam's Mekong Delta have plied produce and crafts from boats. Floating markets became colorful, chaotic must-see stops for travelers. But government flood control projects have altered the Delta, hindering vendors' ability to quickly move between farms and customers and other urbanization, including gleaming supermarkets. And they've siphoned business from the rivers. Many floating markets are only half as big as their heyday. This according to information from iStock. And again, this was written by John Briley, the editor, and included some photos taken by Monique Wu. And Briley, by the way, is based in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and he has a website if you'd like to learn more about some of his travels and interest. It's johnbriley.com, J-O-H-N-B-R-I-L-E-Y, johnbriley.com. Writer Amy Ettinger has also explored some of the forces affecting travelers today and their destinations. Her article, Climate Change is Coming for Your Travel Plans, Here's How to Cope, this one found in the August 2nd, 2019 issue of Washington Post. Hurricane Sandy hit New York City 5 days into our family vacation. My husband and I were stranded in an Airbnb on the Upper West Side, along with our 4-year-old daughter and my 73-year-old mother, as winds felled trees and the storm surge flooded streets and subway tunnels. My mom, an anxious traveler, panicked while my husband and I ran around town after the storm getting food and water. Because airlines were grounded, we couldn't get back to our home in Northern California for 4 days. Fortunately, we were able to stay in the apartment we'd rented until we could score a return flight. But the delay put tremendous strain on my mom, who fretted about being stranded and was so distraught over the delays and the news reports about flooding and destruction that she almost wound up in the emergency room. If we'd been paying closer attention to the predictions that Sandy would hit New York and New Jersey, we could have cut our trip short or canceled it altogether. For any traveler concerned about timing, safety, or cost, the days of being able to simply make reservations and hope for sunny weather are over. Climate change is increasing the frequency and intensity of certain extreme weather events, says Stephen Vavris, a weather researcher at the University of Wisconsin. With the warming climate, we're likely to see more heavy rainfall, storms, and extreme heat, all of which affect travel, says Vavris. You can still be a globetrotter, but these are some tips that will help minimize your travel risk. And she goes on to write, before you book, check your credit cards for travel-related benefits that will cover weather-related events, and use the one that has the best protection to book your trip, says Sarah Ratner. She's a credit card expert at NerdWallet. Several credit cards, including Chase Sapphire Preferred and Chase Sapphire Reserve, offer insurance for trips canceled or affected by severe weather. You can also receive reimbursement for costs associated with a trip delayed by weather, such as hotel stays. Otherwise, you'll pay out of pocket with no chance of reimbursement. If an airline cancels due to weather, the hotel cost is on you, Ratner says. NerdWallet has a comparison of travel cards and coverage at nerdwallet.com/travel-miles-credit-cards. That website again is NerdWallet, N-E-R-D, nerdwallet.com/travel-miles-credit-cards. You can also find comparisons at InsureMyTrip, that's one word, InsureMyTrip, and QuoteRight, and right is spelled W-R-I-G-H-T, and the final one is SquareMouth. If you don't have a credit card that offers good travel protection, consider purchasing travel insurance. More and more people are purchasing travel insurance due to weather extremes, says Christine Buggy, Vice President of Marketing for TravelX Insurance Services. Typical premiums for comprehensive coverage average about 7% of trip costs, Buggy said, but it's important to read the fine print before you buy. Some travel insurance plans do not cover major weather events such as hurricanes. Keep in mind that you usually can't cancel a trip just because you see massive clouds on the horizon. We don't insure the fear of travel, Buggy said. To be able to cancel for a full refund, the storm must have already hit your destination and done severe damage, rendering it uninhabitable. However, an insurance plan can cover prepaid trip costs if weather interrupts your travels or causes delays, baggage loss, or missed connections. Finally, purchase insurance in advance, especially during hurricane season. Once a storm has a name, rather, and a path, you can no longer buy travel insurance for your trip. Also, be sure to do your research. Planning is the key, says Steve Centra, Regional Director of Kayak North America, especially in the cases of locales where you're not familiar with weather patterns. If you're looking forward to going to Southeast Asia, you may want to avoid the rainy season in May to October, Centra says. Now, hurricane season hits the Caribbean in late August through September. Fire season in the western United States runs from summer to fall. Tornado season in the Midwest hits late spring to early summer. Hurricanes can pummel the East Coast in the fall, and winter travel in the Great Lakes and East can be delayed by intense snow. Familiarizing yourself with the seasonal weather, both nationally and globally, can help you avoid travel headaches. Kayak has a guide that allows you to check the precipitation and temperature patterns at top destinations. If you want more information, you can go to kayak.com/travelhacker. Again, that's kayak.com/travelhacker. However, if you're cash-strapped and not risk-averse, you can consider buying tickets for the off-season. Weather can create some opportunities to save money. Take advantage of the deals with that, Centra says. Now, a week before you go, travelers really need to be more diligent about getting a hold of good weather forecasts and taking them more seriously, says Jennifer Francis, a senior scientist at Woods Hole Research Center that's based in Massachusetts. Weather predictions have become much more accurate, but they can tell you only so much. The forecasts are particularly good at showing when a big hurricane or snowstorm will hit, but other extreme weather events, such as tornadoes, can be more challenging for forecasters and travelers to anticipate. You can't predict where a tornado is going to happen, but you can predict where they're likely to form, Francis said. For example, when the jet stream takes a big dip in the middle of the country in the spring, the risk for violent thunderstorms that can unleash damaging winds and hail delay travel increases. Temperatures are heating up globally, said Francis, and heat waves are lasting longer. Record heat spread throughout Europe in June, even as wildfires blazed in Catalonia. There are the kinds of extreme weather scenarios we're likely to see more of in the future, Francis said. It doesn't mean you shouldn't go. You just need to pay attention and be ready for your travel to be disrupted because extreme weather is increasing, she said. Also, prepare for delays and turbulence. Research suggests that flight turbulence will increase because of climate change, Francis said. A study from 2017 predicted that climate change could lead to a 149% increase in severe turbulence. Sometimes these in-flight bumps can be hazardous. In late May, 30 people were injured on a flight from Istanbul to New York. These days, it's especially important to pay attention to the seatbelt signs during flights to avoid injury. And if you want to minimize summer weather delays and turbulence, take a flight in the morning, Francis suggested. Thunderstorms are much more common in the afternoon. If you get caught in a storm, make sure you download your airline's travel app before you go and sign up for cell phone notifications. But you don't have to wait for news. Be proactive. See a big storm on the forecast, contact the airline immediately to see whether your flight is canceled and get rescheduled on the next available flight. Do not cancel a flight before your airline does. You will be responsible for whatever fees are associated with changing your ticket. If it looks as though you'll be stranded, secure your accommodations, hopefully with a credit card that has travel coverage. You don't want to be stuck couch surfing rather than an airport, especially if you have kids or elderly relatives in tow. If the hotels are booked, look on Airbnb, VRBO, and other options, or reach out to your local social media channels to people you know in the area. Once you've got a place to stay, review your itinerary and make changes to the rest of the trip, such as hotel, car rental, restaurant, and tour activity reservations to avoid cancellation charges. When it comes to travel, Rathmus says, you should always be prepared for things to go wrong and hope everything goes right. And by the way, our writer, Amy Ettinger, is based in Santa Cruz, California. She, too, has a website, amyettinger.com, AmyEttinger, amyettinger.com, if you want more information about wise travel, shall we say. Kind of interesting, huh? Well, as we move along, familiarizing yourself with the seasonal weather patterns of your destination can be very important in your travel planning. And, for example, when I traveled to Asmara, Eritrea, that was back then part of Ethiopia, when I did that years ago in East Africa, I learned that there were typically two rainy seasons, one lasting for a couple of weeks, the other usually of shorter duration, and the remainder of the year generally sunny to partly cloudy with daytime temperatures in the 70s or low 80s, depending on the time of the year. So it sounds like a really nice above the equator type of climate, right? Well, what I did not know and came to experience firsthand was the impact of weather patterns that formed over the Sahara Desert, many hundreds of miles away from my location. I vividly remember a notice that we were in the path of a Sahara sandstorm one year. You could see it coming days before it arrived. It looked very much like a straight line rain. We've seen those here in North Carolina. Except this one was filled with sand and wind, not rain. And when it arrived, it deposited sand everywhere. Anything uncovered or unprotected suffered a coating of sand before the storm moved on. Needless to say, we had to do a lot of scrubbing and sweeping to return things to normal. Well, writer Walter Nicklin recently went to Maine to take a look at how tourism has affected some popular travel destinations there. As he explains, for a real taste of mid-coast Maine, as it was and should be, held to Damariscotta. His article is found in the June 27, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. Summer in Camden and Booth Bay Harbor. Lots of foot and car traffic, plus lobster souvenirs, according to the subhead to this article. Crisp bluebird days, so refreshing, there's no need for air conditioning. Evening so dark, the Milky Way lights up the sky. For dinner, the freshest and maybe cheapest lobster you've ever tasted. And then fall asleep to the summer sounds of the sea, a lullaby of waves lapping against rocky shores punctuated by the rhythmic tinkling of sailboat halyards. No wonder mid-coast Maine has become so popular with those whom Mainers called rusticators or summer people. Maybe too popular. The sheer volume of tourists, locals claim, has inevitably altered the character of typical attractions like Camden and Booth Bay Harbor with their picturesque yacht-filled anchorages. In summer, the year-round populations of these two destinations, roughly 5,000 in Camden and 2,000 in Booth Bay Harbor, multiply several-fold. While both coastal towns retain their charm, in summer they can take on the feeling of popular shopping malls, as just about every store's inventory expands to include tchotchkes and souvenirs with lobster motifs and slogans like Maine, the way life should be. To escape the pedestrian crowds, slow-moving cars clog the roads to Camden Hills State Park and Booth Bay's Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. It's not the way a vacation should be. So, just to give you some idea about these two locations, Booth Bay Harbor, about 60 miles from Portland's airport, and more information online at boothbayharbor.com. That's boothbayharbor.com. And Camden is about 90 miles north of Portland Airport, and they have a website, CamdenMaineVacation.com. Camden, C-A-M-D-E-N, CamdenMaineVacation.com. Now, in Dara, Muscoda, and that is D-A-M-A-R-I-S-C-O-T-T-A, Dara, Muscoda, or Dara, Muscoda, Poetic Inspiration, Reversing Falls, Old-Fashioned Stores, and Parking. For a trip into the Maine of the past, like a cottage rental, or take a day trip to less-known alternative lying roughly midway between the two, Dara, Muscoda. Its Indian name, meaning place of alewives, as in a type of herring, was immortalized in the fugue-like poem Variations on a Summer Day by Wallace Stevens, who vacationed there. Dara, Muscoda and the adjacent village of Newcastle retained the feel of authentic small-town Maine, unblemished by a tourist-dependent economy. The lines to buy ice cream cones or browse the art galleries are underwhelming. Cars can usually find parking near on Main Street. The snug, picturesque harbor is too far up on the Dara, Muscoda River to accommodate towering cruise ships. Under the bridge connecting the two villages are the river's remarkable reversing falls. At high tide, the water rushes so fast upstream, rapids are created. As the tide goes out, the rapids flow in the opposite direction. Just a mile up the river are huge historic middens created by the discarded shells of Native Americans. A couple of more miles upstream, where the Anadromous alewives go to spawn, you'll find 4,600 acre freshwater Dara, Muscoda Lake. It offers rather less chilly swimming than the nearby ocean, where the iconic lighthouse at Pemaquid Point stands sentinel, and you've probably seen that in news reports and a lot of TV shows that were filmed in Maine. Back on Dara, Muscoda's Main Street are noteworthy restaurants. These include the Dara, Muscoda River Grill, King Eider's Pub, and Savory Maine. For its real Maine feel, visit St. Fernald's Country Store at breakfast or lunch. Its signature eggs and a frame breakfast sandwich called Eggs Bigelow is just $5.99. For old-fashioned fraps, stop by the soda fountain in the old drugstore. Renee's, a 70-year-old department store that combines Walmart prices with country store atmosphere, bills itself as a Maine adventure. Next door is the Lincoln County Theater, which features not only the latest films, but also live from the Met opera performances. There's a thriving independent bookstore, its own coffee shop, and frequent author book signings. The fact that a fish market and yoga studio share the same building speaks to the town's whimsical charm, which might draw you back again and again, like the migrating alewives. Again, Dara, Muscoda is located 50 miles north of Portland, Maine. Online, you can get more information at DaramaScottaMe, DaramaScotta.com. Writer Walter Nicklin is a writer who is based in Virginia and Maine, and he has a Twitter account, and it's called @RoadTripRedo. @RoadTrip, R-E-D-U-X, Road Trip Redo, okay? So lots of interesting travel and places facing a lot of changes and challenges, and we see why we have such an important responsibility as travelers, I guess, to take care of these needs as they occur, and this is something we have to remember when we travel. So sustainable travel is something we should keep on remembering wherever we go, maybe even give back to the community in some way. One of the examples, I think, in one of our recent articles was don't take plastic straws with you or other plastic items. Try to use reusable things that can go with you and return home with you, and therefore you don't leave them behind. So that makes good sense, but it's interesting. I know that recently I went back to my hometown in eastern North Carolina, and it's amazing the lack of change, if you will. Things have been in a state of repair. There is an effort to revitalize the downtown area, but I have to say it's a very slow and forward-moving thing that I don't know exactly where it's going to be heading in the next few years. And these are the kind of challenges I think we face as we travel. Well, that's it for today's Armchair Traveler. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of our program intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and broadcast readily available as a podcast at the broadcast of the website ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.